TUC Radio, Time of Useful Consciousness. Poisoning the Sky, Geoengineering with Chemtrails. A community investigates and fights back. The good part about producing a radio program in two parts is that I can respond to feedback on part one. Someone considered removing the program from the air because they are convinced that the so-called chemtrail marks in the sky come from routine air traffic. I answered that for several years, even the IPCC and the British Royal Society have shown images of airplanes spraying into the atmosphere and call it Solar Radiation Management, SRM. In fact, spraying from airplanes is one of the best-loved methods of SRM proponents because it is so cheap. However, they claim that the program is not yet being deployed. In part one, you heard from residents of Shasta County in Northern California. They began testing rain and snow after spraying events and found chemicals that only appear after airplane activity has obscured the sky. They're beginning to name the chemicals in chemtrails, among them aluminum, barium, and strontium. One of the most famous defenders of aerial spraying is the scientist David Keith. He's a Harvard physicist and advisor to Bill Gates and Gates' private geoengineering projects. David Keith's book, A Case for Climate Engineering, was published by MIT. Keith admits to risks of aerial spraying, including damaging the ozone layer, creating acid rain, and disrupting rainfall. However, he says that climate change is so serious and CO2 reduction politically so difficult that governments need to resort to climate engineering. He was on the Stephen Colbert Show in December 2013.
How will we save the planet?
You could actually spray sulfuric acid in the stratosphere 20 kilometers over our head and use that to stop the planet warming up. And spray pollution into the atmosphere to stop it warming.
So in the end, pollution saved them all. We owe pollution. We owe acid rain an apology, is what you're saying.
It would be a totally imperfect technical fix.
Okay.
It would have risks. It wouldn't get us out of the long-run need to stop polluting, but it might actually save people and be useful.
Okay, so how many planes are we talking about here? How do you do this?
So let's say you wanted to stop it warming in 2020.
Yeah,
you'd
yeah.
start with a fleet of just two or three kind of modified business jets.
What kind
of,
like a G6?
Yeah, like a G650.
Like a G6.
That's
like
it. You'd put, say, 20,000 tons of sulfuric acid uh-huh. into the stratosphere every year,
uh-huh.
and each year you have to put a little more,
mm-hmm.
and this doesn't, in the long run, mean that you can forget about cutting emissions. We will need to rein in
no,
emissions.
No, we'll get to it eventually, yeah.
But it does.
But in the meantime, we're shrouding the earth in sulfuric acid.
So people are terrified about talking about this because uh-huh. they're scared that it will prevent us cutting emissions.
Right, and also that it's sulfuric acid.
It
I think
is.
You're bearing the lead. Is there any possible way this could come back to bite us in the ass? Blanketing the earth in sulfuric acid, because I'm all for it. This is the all-chocolate dinner. I still get to have my CO2, and I just need to spray sulfuric acid.
Right.
All over the earth.
Right question, but we put 50 million tons of sulfuric acid in the air now as pollution, and it
okay.
kills a million people a year worldwide.
Okay, and that's
and so
good or bad?
It's terrible.
But it'll be better if we put more in.
We're talking about 1% of that, a tiny fraction of that. So we should reduce that sulfuric acid.
So if it
pollution.
Kills a million people and it's we're only bad. Doing 1% more, we're just killing 10,000 more people.
You can do math.
Okay.
But that's, so killing people is not the objective here.
Killing people, not the objective.
Objective
I just
objective
wanted to be clear. I just wanted to be clear.
Actually slowing climate change, actually stopping climate change in a way that could help people this generation, people living now, in a way there's no other easy alternative.
Can you just do it for part of the planet?
Pretty much the whole planet.
No, but could you? Could you just, like, say, just make things better for the United States?
Very hard to do. It seems that this is mostly global. But the big fear is that one country will want it one way and one the other, like two frat boys arguing over the thermostat. And in many ways, the biggest fear here, well, we have no idea how to actually agree. This is the kind of stuff I wake up sweating about.
Well, it's your goddamn idea.
No, it actually turns out to be an old idea. This
really?
Was known since President Johnson. And the scientific community mostly decided not to talk about it for fear that people would then lose the threat of cutting emissions.
Could an individual start this?
In practice, only a country, a big country.
What about a man in like a hollowed out volcano with henchmen who occasionally shakes his fist at the sky and says, they said I was a fool at Harvard. Who's the fool now?
It's the natural worry, but I think in the end, no. This would be done by major countries, but the problem is how countries agree about where to set the thermostat.
So maybe it's happening already. You ever look at those planes up there? They have contrails behind them. Maybe all those planes are the contrails. Maybe they're actually spraying chemicals into the atmosphere right now, and Uncle Sam isn't telling us.
Seems extremely unlikely.
The United States is not telling something to its citizens? That seems extremely likely to me. Read the newspaper. I think they might have your idea already. Dr. Mister, thank you so much. David Keith, a case for climate engineering.
That was an excerpt from Stephen Colbert's December 2013 interview. Now back to the July 2014 meeting of the Shasta County Board of Supervisors. After repeated attempts to get the local and state agencies that monitor air and water quality to begin testing for chemicals named in geoengineering patents, they are requesting action from the ground up. They consider this a matter of public health and an issue of citizens' right to know. In part one, you heard expert witnesses ranging from former Fish and Wildlife to USDA officials, pilots, neurologists, and Air Force veterans. In this final program, you will hear testimony based on experience, ranging from plain folk as well as professionals, gardeners, and ranchers, including a guest from Spain who will talk about successful efforts to get geoengineering aerial spraying investigated by the European Parliament. Here we go.
I'm Dr. Frank Lavolsi. I've been in the community since 1980.
It's good to see you, Dr. Lavolsi.
Good to see you, too. Thank you for holding this meeting. I became interested in chemtrails about 8 years ago when I was in Hawaii, and the Hawaiians are really being very vocal about it. Every place I've gone in the world now, and most recently Quebec and Prince Edward Island, Nova Scotia, Maine, and Massachusetts, they're all over the place. I'm also a pilot, and I've flown into Travis Air Force Base on several occasions. There's a whole area designated to replenishing these planes that fly and drop this chemical on us. It's totally guarded. The people that are loading these planes with the chemicals are dressed in complete hazmat outfits. So if this is not harmful, why are they in a complete hazmat outfit? As a doctor, I can tell you there's been about a 25% increase in lung problems in this area and in most areas that they're spraying. Secondly, I concur about the increase in number of Alzheimer's. They have since been able to take the aluminum and micronize it, which means it'll stay up longer. But you inhale that, it goes up through your cribriform plate and into your through your sinuses and into the brain. If you remember 8 to 10 years ago, there was this big move to get rid of aluminum from underarm deodorant because it would cause Alzheimer's. Look what they're doing to us now. Any agency I've called, I've been stonewalled. It's high time that we as citizens of this great country take action.
Thank you, Dr. Lavolsi. Mark McCandish.
Thank you very much for this opportunity. I came here mostly as a person who's worked in the military industrial complex, worked on F-106s in the Air Force, had a secret clearance, worked as a consultant to a variety of the top aerospace companies. I've had, and I've worked on systems that are still classified today, 20 years later. I want to give you a little bit of history on the background behind nanoparticles, as has been described before. A nanometer is 1/1,000,000th of a meter. It's very small. In fact, if you have particles, say, that are 40 or 50 nanometers across, you can take and line 50 of them up next to a single red blood cell. These things are extremely tiny. They're pervasive. The manufacturing processes, there's probably 5 or 6 different ones that I know of. There's probably others. But the explosion of nanotechnology has grown since the late 1980s, early 1990s. It is now growing exponentially. When you look up at the sun and you see a white haze, that is aluminum floating in the air right now, and it's coming from the aircraft. Now, as it happens, the Air Force conducted a study starting in 1993. It was called In Vitro Toxicity of Aluminum Nanoparticles in Rat Alveolar Macrophages. That's a real fancy way of saying testing the effect of aluminum nanoparticles on the white blood cells in the little air sacs in your lung, the alveoli. And what they found in this 8-year study was that these particles, when you're exposed to long enough, it suppresses the ability of your white blood cells to defend you from airborne infections coming into your lungs. So it suppresses your immune system. But they also found that these same particles, once they get into your system, they can actually go through the barrier in each one of the cells. They get inside the cells, and these particles can actually suppress the ability of mitochondria, which are in the cells, that help to gobble up toxins and things that would be harmful to the nucleus and the reproduction process of the cells in your body. These processes are suppressed, and so essentially by breathing this material in, your immune system is dramatically suppressed. Now, in addition to this, the materials that are going into the environment right now, aluminum oxide nanoparticles and barium nanoparticles, these just happen to be the same materials that they use in nanothermite explosives. And so when this stuff settles down out of the air into the environment, it is small enough to be absorbed through the root structure of the trees in the forest. And so when there's a forest fire, and there will be a forest fire, those fires burn dramatically hotter. The cost of firefighting, the cost in the healthcare system have nearly doubled in the last 10 years. The amount of acreage is lost because of fires. The impact on human health is dramatic, and it's well documented. So, in fact, in closing, I want to say that NASA has also conducted a research program in what they call metallized fuels. We're actually putting aluminum oxide right in the fuel because it has 2 atoms of aluminum and 3 atoms of oxygen. So during the combustion process, it releases all that oxygen and dramatically increases efficiency, but it leaves the aluminum in the air.
Thank you, Mr. Candace.
You're welcome.
Okay, that completes the 10 scheduled speakers, and now we'll go with the ones who signed up to speak, starting with Kim Moore, followed by Lorena O'Malley.
I'm Kimberly Moore, Cherokee Native American. Again, I want to thank you for having this presentation. We have been on our hands and knees begging for your help and cooperation. I hope that now that we've brought in the experts and let them share their evidence and testimony, that you will be willing to come to the table and work with us to help us get to legislators and to help us file the federal complaints. That being said, I'm going to go ahead. California should have jurisdiction over the weather, not the federal government, not the military. Because of these programs and experiments conducted by the federal government, the military, this has contributed to the drought we see now in California, as the satellite images show. I thank you for your time and attention.
Thank you, Ms. Moore.
Lorena O'Malley.
Hello, and thank you for giving me this opportunity to speak. One issue that definitely needs to be addressed and disclosed to the public is the increase of UV radiation. All this is happening because the particles being released through geoengineering are ripping apart the ozone layer. The ozone layer is what protects and preserves life. So this is what's supposed to happen. Sunlight passes through the atmosphere. All UVC and UVB radiation should be absorbed by the ozone layer. What happens when our ozone layer is depleted? There was a study done here in our North State last year. The readings reflected an exponential rise in UVB radiation. Due to its high energy, its potential for causing biological damage to plants, animals, and humans is exceptionally high, and even small increases could lead to significant biological damage. There are numerous peer-reviewed studies that verify this fact. According to agencies like the World Health Organization, no more than 5% of the UV reaching the surface of the Earth should be UVB. The other 95% should be UVA. UVC should be zero. So what did the test show? UVB, the most lethal form of UV radiation, has now escalated to almost 70% of the total UV in several places measured in the U.S., not 5% or less, as we're being told by the media. My concern is, if there's no ozone layer, there's no life on Earth. It's that simple.
Thank you, Ms. O'Malley.
Rose Taylor.
Hi, my name is Rose Taylor, and I was here in 2008
Welcome.
When we asked the supervisors to investigate and look into this issue. I thank you again that you have the courage. I'm going to read by this young poet who said, "It's 3:23 in the morning, and I'm awake because my great-great-grandchildren won't let me sleep. My great-great-grandchildren ask me in my dreams, what did you do while the planet was plundered? What did you do while the earth was unraveling? What did you do once you knew?" And I ask you to show the courage that these people have all around the world, including a woman from Spain is here to speak. She flew in just to speak to you. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Taylor.
The next speaker is Josefina Frail-Martin.
Yes, good morning to everybody. Thank you for letting me speak in this event. I'm the lady coming from Spain, but I represent an international platform confronting issues of geoengineering. This is called SkyGuards, and it's conformed of civil society associations from over 20 different European countries. First of all, I bring you this board and the organizers and the people present our support from European civil society. Geoengineering is a global problem, and we, the people of the world, we must unite to stop this insanity. Since 1999, NATO countries have seen their skies systematically spread in the frame of climate control programs. Without people's knowledge, without people's consent, and in disregarding the legal principle of precaution. We took the claims and concerns of European citizens to the European Parliament in a 2-day event last year. We let them know that civil society is not going to accept denial or silence for an answer. We made a petition for them to start an independent investigation of the facts in order to ban these climate control programs, but also in order to demand accountability to those responsible of it. And also, we want democratic and parliamentary control of these military research programs. The petition has been accepted. We have now to be vigilant to ensure that this is done properly. The success of this investigation by the European Parliament will have a positive impact for us all. We hope that this chamber will also take the positive action that will go in the same direction to find out the truth. Because you are responsible to defend the common good. And what is more important for us citizens, a common good as our health and our security. Thank you.
Muchas gracias, Señorita Martín.
Laura Rhodes.
Thank you.
Welcome.
I'm glad to be here. I came out from the Texas Panhandle, 90 miles north of Amarillo. We've got some alarming rates of skin cancer in Amarillo. I'm a farmer, rancher. We have wheat, corn, milo, cotton. We have an agronomer that comes out and does soil sampling once a month, and we're finding high levels of aluminum and barium. Our crops are being burned. When I go barefoot outside, immediately the soil, it just eats my skin away and my grandson's skin away, and I notice that my grandson is having nosebleeds now, and he's having repeated illnesses, and he's a very healthy, active, normal 2-year-old boy. I'm noticing a high rate of MISA, which is similar to MRSA. and our cattle. So our cattle are affected by this. I've noticed people with high rates. My husband, he's in the soil working on one of the tractors. He's got a very small cut. It becomes a bad MRSA infection. He almost lost his arm. This is happening with a lot of our ranchers out there. And I can't get anybody to believe me. They kind of think I'm a lunatic, like this whole geoengineering thing is some theory. And it's not a theory, because it's happening to us out there just as well as it is here. It's a big problem. And a lot of people are affected. You know, I don't know who's doing it, the elite, the government, I'm not sure. But something needs to be addressed, and we need to save our planet. This is happening all over the world. And please listen to the people, and maybe this is the grassroots right here in Shasta County that can get this ball rolling. So thank you, everybody, for listening to me, and that I'm not really crazy.
Katrina Knoll.
Hi, thank you.
Welcome.
Hi. My contribution today is to speak about a cleverly written law that has enabled consistent aerosol spraying to continue without being contested in court, and in fact provides a legal protection for those doing the spraying. Public Law 105-85, Section 1078 states, restrictions on the use of human subjects for testing of chemical or biological agents. The Secretary of Defense may not conduct directly or by contract, one, any test or experiment involving the use of a chemical agent or a biological agent on a civilian population, or two, any other testing of a chemical agent or a biological agent on human subjects. C, informed consent required. The Secretary of Defense may conduct a test or experiment described in subsection B only if informed consent to the testing was obtained from each human subject in advance from the testing on that subject. B, exceptions. The prohibition in subsection A does not apply to a test or experiment carried out for any of the following purposes. One, any peaceful purpose that is related to a medical, therapeutic, pharmaceutical, agricultural, industrial, or research activity. Two, any purpose that is directly related to protection against toxic chemicals or biological weapons and agents. Three, any law enforcement purpose, including any purpose related to riot control. So Section A prohibits these cruel and inhumane chemical and biological tests on humans. Then Section B says that the prohibition in Section A do not apply to tests carried out for virtually any purpose. So Section B completely negates the prohibitions of Section A. In other words, the United States government can test chemicals and biological agents on humans for nearly any purpose they desire. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Knoll.
All right, Lisa Thomas.
Thank Welcome. You so much. I'd like to thank everybody in this room for being here. It means a tremendous amount. My family moved to the Sierra Nevada foothills in California 8 years ago. We live in Nevada County, but I'm here because I'm asking you to be a voice for people everywhere. For 6 years, my mother and I marveled at the cloudless summer blue sky here in California. I hardly ever saw a jet plane anywhere near our house. On April 11th of 2013, that changed. Jets came over our house two or three at a time, all with persistent emissions coming from them. They repeatedly crossed the sky, spraying these emissions until the sky was coated completely white. They came again on April 12th and created the same white sky. I collected samples of three rainstorms between the summer of 2013 and January of 2014. All three contained aluminum, barium, and when I tested for it, strontium. When the first rainstorm puddled on my glass patio table and then dried, it left a shiny metallic film behind, just like what I was seeing on my ponds. I also collected pictures from friends, family, and concerned citizens in every state and three other countries, and made a slideshow to make it easier for people to see what is unfolding in our atmosphere. In May, six concerned citizens and I met with the federal EPA, and we asked them to please help us. They claim they are unable to do anything without someone from Congress initiating and funding an investigation, and said they do not have equipment capable of testing nanoparticulate-sized matter. I've contacted EPW, the Senate committee that oversees EPA. They will not return my phone calls or my emails. We need your voice. Our planet is being poisoned. Our ozone layer is being depleted. Our trees and insects are dying, and our children are breathing air so dirty that the haze is now visible every day. Your choices and your actions today could make a difference for millions of people, not just Shasta County.
Thank you, Ms. Thomas.
You heard many voices chosen from almost 50 who came to the Shasta County Board of Supervisors meeting on July 15, 2014. They demand regular official testing of air, rain, and snow for chemicals such as aluminum, barium, and strontium that are named in geoengineering patents. Many who paid for testing out of their own pockets and found these and other chemicals and have lab reports to back it up were concerned and angry about being called chemtrail conspiracy theorists. They ask why government agencies in the U.S. refuse to do testing while discrediting those who demand it. What's there to hide, they ask. I want to thank the Shasta County Board of Supervisors for the audio for this radio program. You can hear this program again for free on TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org. Look for the newest programs page. You can get information on how to order a 1-hour CD at cost on tucradio.org or by calling 1-707-463-2654. And I will repeat that number in a moment. TUC Radio is free and depends on the support of listeners like you. Your donation keeps this program on the air. TUC Radio's mailing address is Post Office Box 44, Calpella, California, 95418. That's Calpella, California, 95418. For more information, call 707-463-2654 or go to TUC Radio's website, tucradio.org, for the address and donate buttons. There you can also subscribe to weekly free podcasts. TUC Radio celebrates 20 years on the air. Time of useful consciousness is an aeronautical term. It's the time between the beginning of oxygen deficiency and the loss of consciousness. Time for useful projects to rescue the planet and the plane. Time of useful consciousness. Three of my most favorite words. My name is Maria Glodden. Thank you for listening.